Dat Dare, as it said, is Art Blakey on drums with Dat Dare, along with his jazz messengers Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Lee Morgan, trumpet, Bobby Timmons, piano, Jimmy Merritt on bass, and of course, the great Art Blakey himself on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Monday, September the 30th, and all hell is breaking loose, and actually probably not in Congress, and we'll get to that later in the program. But first, we'll talk about a case that drew wide attention because it was contemporaneous with the George Zimmerman case and the shooting death of Trayvon Martin. And this case is the case of Marissa Alexander, who you will recall was convicted and sentenced to 20 years in prison for discharging a firearm, and it was determined that she did not qualify. That case did not qualify as a stand your ground case, and she was convicted. An appellate court last week threw out both the conviction and her sentence. And we have her attorney to explain why. He is Bruce Zimmet, and he joins us today. Thank you so much, Mr. Zimmet, for being with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you. So could you tell us first, what was the reason given by the appellate court for dismissing the charge and the sentence?
There were several reasons, but the most basic reason was the fact that the jury instruction that was given to the jury improperly placed a burden on Marissa Alexander to prove that she utilized self-defense. In Florida, the law is it's up to the state of Florida to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not act in self-defense. So this was a classic case of what's known as burden shifting, where everyone is presumed innocent and the burden to prove themselves innocent never is placed on the defendant.
Well, the court had a kind of mixed message in its ruling. I read the ruling. It says, on the one hand, it did not agree that it was a stand your ground defense, but it also said, on the other hand, that you were correct that the jury was improperly instructed. Why did the stand your ground defense not hold up?
Well, I think you're right and wrong at the same time. what the appellate court did say is that the pretrial motion to dismiss the case based on the stand your ground statute was correctly decided. However, the appellate court was clear to say that Marissa could certainly still use the stand your ground defense at her second trial. Mm-hmm. So stand your ground is clearly in play for her second trial. Okay. The procedure in Florida is that prior to trial, you can file a motion to dismiss or what's called a motion for immunity on the stand your ground basis. If that's granted, the case is over. Even if it's not granted, that still means that you can use the stand your ground defense at trial. And that's the position that Marissa's in. She clearly can use it and will use it.
Now, thank you for that. That was a very good correction. I appreciate it. You are now handling a new trial, the new trial for Ms. Alexander. And what would be your approach in your new trial? What would be the defense?
Well, we're not going to litigate anything outside of the courtroom. Our team, we have a group of attorneys who are doing this case on a volunteer pro bono basis. But clearly, this is a self-defense case. And I think from a very broad standpoint, that's what the approach will be in the case, that Marissa was in fear for her life and acted appropriately and reasonably used the force that she used.
Why seek a new trial and not, say, a pardon?
Well, we believe that Marissa was improperly convicted at her first trial. The appellate court agreed, and obviously a person, once their conviction is reversed, she's presumed to be innocent. So Marissa Alexander today stands as an innocent woman, and certainly we would want her innocence to be established in a courtroom.
Does it matter how you get it, whether at trial or via a pardon?
To some people, a pardon suggests that someone has done something wrong and needs a pardon. Some people believe that innocent people don't need to be pardoned. Our position is that Marissa, at this point, is presumed innocent, and at this point, the case is set for trial.
I want to ask you about the Stand Your Ground law. You, of course, you've had the opportunity to examine the application of this law. Do you find any racial disparity in the way the law is applied and successfully applied in trials in the state of Florida?
Well, there's a lot that's been written on that, and it really would not be appropriate for me to comment on that. I know that the Tampa newspaper and St. Petersburg newspaper had done an extensive study of that about a year ago, and I think their statistics, lead open those questions as to whether it's being applied the same way to people of different races.
When do you expect to go to trial?
We're going to have a status hearing in front of Judge Daniel in Jacksonville, probably within about the next 30 days. So understanding that at the end of the year, judges' dockets are full, our best guess is we're probably talking about something like a mid-January trial. But that's certainly subject to a lot of different variables.
Well, thank you so much for this briefing and for this update. And we will, of course, be talking with you again as the case proceeds.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much
Bye-bye. For
your participation today. All right. What I wanted to do was really save as much time as we can to talk about what's going on also in Washington, D.C., and what is passing for democracy. You know, I just can't understand how it is that people can function this way, get paid quite well, not do the job they're supposed to be doing, and yet still are employed. And they will leave Washington, D.C. or Congress today, and they will still have a job. And yet their job today will determine whether more than 800,000 people have jobs or will get paid. Federal workers would be furloughed, and they will not be among them. So we have a very interesting dynamic going on in Washington, D.C., where literally everybody could disobey the rules, and there are no consequences. The consequences, we're told, are, well, you know, come next election, you'll see what's going to happen to you. We're going to, you know, really slam the Republican Party, say the Democrats. And the Republicans point to the fact that the Democrats are just slacking off and defending an indefensible piece of legislation. The concern is all of this is fine if it happened and within the timetable for this kind of legislation. But they don't have to obey any rules at all. They can just bring it down to the last minute and have people kind of, you know, blood pressure is raised and they're worried about what's going to happen and all this. This is a form, I believe, this is a form of tyranny. This is a renegade Congress. They're deciding that they don't have to obey any rules. They're sure that they're not going to be on the receiving end of the people's wrath. They're so sure of it. And we have, in that respect, we have a triangulation of bad behavior. We have it in the White House, we have it in the Senate, and we have it in the House of Representatives. And all the while, these entities, these bodies, are presenting their country to the world as a so-called superpower. They're able to, you know, accelerate negotiations with Syria and Iran, the governments that they call pariah states, and yet they can't do the job right here at home. You know, this is when you need a Donald Trump to just give them the two words, you're fired. How do you propose to run a country like this? We've had very little movement in 5 years now. This is the first term of President Obama. Very little got done. And certainly with respect to his most faithful constituencies, really little got done. And life is normal. People are, you know, this is my corner of the ring, and I'm planting my feet firmly here, and nothing is going to make me move, and they're acting like children. Sorry, that disparages children. So, how do you interpret what's going on in Congress? I'm just so disgusted. I'm just so fed up of the whole thing. You feel so abused as an American citizen that this is the best that they can do, the people who are making the laws of the land, who are themselves renegades, that this is the best that we could produce. And we are forced to live with it. This is a huge constitutional question. Why should people be forced to tolerate this kind of incompetence? Why should we have to live with people who think that it's no big deal? They're fighting for their so-called political careers. The thing is, none of these folks really have a great sense of urgency about getting things done and on time, because they're not hurting. They're not hurting at all. I drew to your attention the other day that a huge number, almost half the House, are millionaires, and 68% of the Senate are billionaires. Very, very wealthy people. So they no longer identify with the anxiety that people are experiencing every single day, and in some cases every minute of every single day, about where the next penny is going to come from. How are they going to make it from Monday to Tuesday? They get elected, and in their heads, they join a club, a kind of elite club. Whether they're Republican or Democrat doesn't matter. Their ideologies are dramatically the same. The Democrats are Republicans, and the Republicans are Democrats. There's only, you know, just artificial differences. But there has been a serious alignment of ideology. We have a president who believes he is, on his own, an imperial power. He does not have to talk to anybody in Congress. He communicates by executive order and by doing end runs around the legislative process. He learned that from the sleazy Mr. Clinton. You don't have to go according to the rules. You make up your own rules. These are the very things that the United States condemns in other governments and regimes, they call them, that flout the rule of law, that have no appreciation for the so-called democratic process. And here we have all of the citizens of the United States held hostage by three separate tyrannical groups who have no intention of doing the people's business. They're all dealing in a realm that none of us belong. We are not part of that. This whole Affordable Care Act was constructed by special interests and the lawyers for special interests. And they made sure that they have this thing nice and tight. They can assure billions and billions of dollars. Quiet as it's kept, the government has shifted from being government by the people, for the people, to an insurance agency. The government is now in the insurance business. I think that begs a huge question. Under the guise that it is, quote, reforming health care, unquote, it is ushering in, under the radar, monumental changes in the function and the scope of government and the authority of government. This government, quietly as it's kept, has now reached a totalitarian state in which it's saying to people, you will buy insurance whether you think you need it or not. And you will pay a fine if you don't. And if you don't pay a fine, we can take your house. We could take your car. We could take your bank account to satisfy your debt. Does that sound like the United States? And then they're going back and forth and back and forth as if, everybody knows the fine details of every page of this ridiculous bill. This law, sorry. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of pages long, because, of course, it was written by lawyers. They have a fantastic talent for producing clauses that just put ironclad claws on their interests. You can't break it. You can't open it up. And I can bet you that practically no legislator, none, has personally read this law. They have staffs that they hire. You read this portion, you read that portion, but they themselves don't know what's in this law, which was concocted in secret, which was never really debated in Congress, which is a democratic process. And you have a president who has converted the White House into a bunker. He sits in the Oval Office and communicates with Congress by news conference and executive orders. This is intolerable. So my idea is that since they can't do their jobs, since we have such incompetence, and since we have such brazenness of people who decide, well, look, it's no big deal if we just shut down the government in this day and age, that's what they're willing to do, hold all of America hostage to their egos, their very damaged egos, to their sense of authority and entitlement, then pieces of legislation like this should require a plebiscite. This should not be in the hands of these nuts down there in Washington, D.C., who can't get, you know, who just can't find their butts with both hands of the flashlight. We should have a plebiscite. If it's so difficult, let people know what the issue is, put it to a vote, have the whole nation vote. Do we like this or we don't like this? Do we, in fact, have government by the people for the people, or don't we? Do you elect people to Congress and to the U.S. Senate and to the presidency so that they can do their own thing and however they want to do it, and they force the rest of us to live with the consequences of their stupidity and their greed and their the sale of their souls? Is that what it is? And then the media people who are reporting on this act as if they know what's going on with this Affordable Care Act. They don't know either. But they're taking sides. One says, well, no matter what the Republicans do, Fox News says we're in the Republican corner. And then some other place goes, well, you know, we're in the Democratic corner. And then the progressives are in some kind of corner. I don't know what corner they're in. But nobody's in the people's corner. And when you consider the enormity of this bill, and you consider that the reason that there is such a fierce opposition on the part of Barack Obama, who now I see Bill Clinton has reared his head again to insert himself in the discourse as if he has anything. Well, he does, actually. His acolyte is in Congress, in the White House, sorry. But, you know, the government shut down on him, too. We have this sordid play going on. And they are in a whole different world over there. They're in an entirely different world. But come tomorrow, the president is telling the nation he's expecting people to sign up for what we don't even know. What do we get? We'll find out after we sign up. You're not entitled to know the details. You're not entitled to... We're so stupid. We're so ignorant. We're so unschooled. We can't be trusted to manage the intellectual burden of this bill. It is so way beyond our capacity to understand. So they're saving us the trouble by acting in our interests. This is what they tell people with a straight face. Everybody's lying. You can't trust any of them. They're all lying. They're all misrepresenting this. They'll tell you that this is about reforming health care, but the places that need reforming the most, they're not touching at all. The hospitals and the doctors will continue to overbill. The pharmaceutical companies are going to be like fat cats. They have an in. The insurance companies are already making out like bandits, literally. The last thing on the schedule is the actual care of patients or would-be patients. And that is not where the costs are accrued, believe it or not. The consumer is not where the reforms are needed the most. It is in that barracuda tank. You know, that you find doctors, hospital administrators, you find the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry and the medical instruments and the medical supplies industry. All these people are the people who are making tons and tons of money. Almost every day you read about, you know, some doctor who has overbilled Medicaid for $5 million or $10 million and $11 million. Poor consumers are not getting the care. And it's never been about them. They are not accounting for the costs of health care spiraling out of control. It is the fact that you have a scraped toe and you go to get that done. First of all, you can't find a general practitioner to take care of a scraped toe. Everybody is a specialist, and they charge you specialist prices to take care of a scraped toe. And then when you go for a scraped toe, then you will have to have the best, you know, have to have an MRI. A basic X-ray won't do. And then maybe they don't trust the MRI because that's just only $5,000 a shot. So let's give you another MRI to do a comparative study. All this is money in the pocket of administration of medicine and medical care. And the doctor who has decided, well, look, you know, I spent a really good penny just earning my degree, and then I had to get my license in the specialty area, and, you know, I got to make this back. I now am entitled to a quality of life. I got to have my yacht. We got to have our twice-a-year vacations in the south of France. You know, my children have to go to the best schools. This is why I became a doctor. I could become a doctor to heal anybody. I became a doctor to live well. And this is the kind of carnage that goes on. And it is very disingenuous for the government to say that this is now people-focused. No, the people are just cogs in the wheel. The people are just cogs in a huge wheel, and it's all about money. I make note of the fact that Mrs. Obama was in the hospital administration business. I make note of the fact that this bill actually was the charge of Hillary Clinton. And the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industries have come calling and have gotten the goodies already. Now, the only thing that is necessary to make this whole thing work are the suckers who should be signing up as of tomorrow. We don't know what this bill is, but we do know that we are necessary because everything is predicated on the backs of the suckers who will be sucked into this vortex of incestuous political relationships. And it is on our health that this entire system rests. And that is why the urgent need to get this thing passed, and that is why the ferocity of the fight. Because truth be told, the Republicans are mad as hell that the Democrats have captured the larger share of the people bearing gifts in exchange for a place at the table. What are you thinking? We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts, because this is, we should be talking about this among ourselves. 888-874-4888. We'll take your calls and comments right after these messages about PRN's programming. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and you are up on 888-874-4888. Thank you, Tom. You're the first caller today.
Yes, Eutrice. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you.
This is autumn day. My wife has been in the health profession. She's an OBGYN for the last 25 years. You paint, I believe, a little distorted picture of the doctors and their greed. At this point, they're the low end of the totem pole of people making money on this thing. They're dictated to any number of ways. The restrictions on how they practice will become more and more onerous as this moves forward. And the majority of them in our circle of friends have no idea what is going to happen to them with this piece of garbage legislation.
Well, I mean, so what is the feeling? What is the specific objection so far as you can determine it?
They're kind of at a loss. My wife had to undergo a significant amount of money to institute electronic medical records. She has to carry around a small little laptop now. And she has to enter these things in the late hours of the evening. She's home at 11 o'clock entering patient information because she cannot detach herself from trying to take care of her patients and type while she's talking to them. So now something that she used to be able to write into a chart in about 2-3 minutes after she has seen the patient, write her orders, write her med orders, things of that nature, is endless screen to screen, get out of this screen, click through this menu, do this, do that. And in many instances, our friend who is a primary care physician, who is totally fed up and would rather be an herbalist, he sees things, since he hasn't instituted this, he's totally against this medical record stuff, but he sees patient records printed out that come to him from other specialists. And he asked them, because, see, there's a menu that you can click, and it'll populate this whole screen of things. And he would say, did this doctor do this? Did this doctor do that? Do you remember him mentioning this to you? And in an effort, because they're under such pressure, and I'll say this right out, I don't know a doctor whose income isn't off by at least 30% over the last few years. And he'll say, well, now to in some way continue to generate revenue from the 10 or 15 minutes they see you, the coding is a whole other Rubik's Cube of insanity that they have to try in some way code things properly to get some modest reimbursement. Their public fee schedule has no relation to what they're getting reimbursed. They're dictated to by the HMOs and the other entities that are reimbursing them. Now, on the other side, there is a lot of price gouging as far as testing. There is a cardiology group I know of that the testing was taken over by the hospital, and I'm not going to name anything, but it's known that the test, say just in round numbers, that used to be $400 is now $650 being charged by the hospital instead of by the cardiologist. And nobody's batting an eye. If HMOs were put in place to somehow rein in or, you know, reduce health care costs, they're an abject failure. They should be totally dismantled. They do nothing except pay their CEOs and their shareholders. So that's my little kind of, you know.
No, but it's a very good contribution, as a matter of fact. You're correct. Many physicians, I mean, the field has seen an exodus of physicians who just refuse to, you know, go along with the program, and the program is spend more time administrative with administrative duties, and you're spending less quality time actually engaging with your patient
no,
with medical care.
No, because they want to establish these databases that they can have access to. It has no relation at all.
Well, they're making the doctors responsible. This is, again, part of the function of the hospitals protecting themselves. There will now be shared accountability and shared responsibility from an insurance point of view in case the hospital gets sued. This is the way the hospital has basically made the physicians share in the responsibility if anything should happen and a patient sues. Doctors have left. I have a brother who's a physician. So I understand what's going on in the field. The thing that I'm saying, the thing I was trying to bring to your attention is the changes within the industry are such that even when you, I mean, doctors have hard choices to make. Do they stay with this or do they just get out? Do they?
Well, many of them that I know, absent family obligations and, just things that they have to take care of, would much rather do something else. But they've based a lifestyle and family obligations and expenses on a particular income that's declining rapidly.
Right. Then you have, they play all these games, hospitals that, whether you're fighting for admission, admitting privileges and all of these kinds of things. The point is the last person on the last rung of the ladder is where the patient is.
Sure.
And the industry is responsible for that. And this entire care, I think we agree on that, the Affordable Care Act is less patient-centered and more money-centered, and the government now being directly in the insurance business.
And yet the patient is the money entity, the one that drives the whole thing. Without the patient, before HMOs went into existence, 96.5% of hospitals in the United States were not for profit. And there's a really interesting detailed story on this fellow named Rainwater, who was a buddy of the Bushes, and how he started U.S. Healthcare in Texas. Him and a friend leveraging $75,000 to buy two hospitals, and then cookie-cuttering it into this profit machine, on top of whatever happens with the insurances, on top of whatever happens with everything else that's going on. The implement manufacturers that sell the same hip joint in Europe for 30% of what it's sold here, and no one bats an eye. Why can't the government negotiate pharmaceutical costs that went by the board when Bush signed that thing? Canada negotiates pharmaceutical costs. They don't let the pharmacy companies have their full profit margins. It's ridiculous.
Well, the hospitals you refer to, I mean, they're called voluntary hospitals. These are essentially non-profit hospitals, but it's a lie.
At this point, but no, previously, once again, like 30 years ago, before HMO started to get the traction and started to go to this whole, look, when an HMO, it had been known, how can these people just get away with no admission of guilt and they'll pay a $750 million fine?
Mm-hmm.
So how much did they bilk along the way?
That's the question. And that's where the people, the system is getting fleeced. And in fact, there is agreement. They all agree. They could always work out something to make sure that the people who they report to, who they feel a need to satisfy, that they get the goodies. It's this whole thing, this intense recruitment effort and the drive to get people into the grinder. That's really what it is. They don't care. Like I said before, the president doesn't care that once you sign up and you're committed to paying, your premiums.
Whatever happens, happens. You got a plan. Good luck.
I don't care.
Enjoy.
I don't care. And they know full well when he says that, these premiums are going to be reasonable and affordable and all of this kind of stuff. Well, if in any logical mind, you would say if the premiums are low, then the deductible is high. It turns out I heard that today. They're saying, we were tracking some people, and they, by calculating whatever it is, the premium would be, they would have a very high deductible. So it still means that they will be without health care because they still would not be able to afford health care.
Yes, this is the insanity. My friend, who is also a dear friend, he writes multiple lines of health insurance. And he was trying to do a seminar for people about what this means. He had a meeting with Aetna, and they're sitting there like, well, we can't really answer that at this time. We understand your concerns, but right now we really have no answer for you. Because their stuff has been submitted and has to be reviewed by the state review committee, and then into this whole exchange thing, whatever that's going to be all about, and it is just a Rubik's cube of garbage.
I'm telling you. Thank you so much, Tom. Really nice talking with you today. Really, it was really very nice talking with you. Thanks for calling, Clara from Philadelphia.
Oh, I got in so easily.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm thinking here, there's one thing that the previous caller said that really confirmed in my mind what I've been thinking. The lifestyle that a person establishes keeps them held in bondage. And I think this whole system is based on fear and blackmail. By blackmail, it is that I'll give you this, and you get hooked on this. And the longer you do this, the more I can abuse you. And it's got to be, we've got to stop doing these things. The only people who keep this system going is us.
Mm-hmm.
We're the only ones. And you had a guest, you had a discussion one time about what black people, now this in my mind applies to everyone, but in your particular, and on that particular program, you were talking about the need for black people to have their own party. We don't need any parties. They do nothing for us. We participate in these scams. That's the only thing that keeps them going. We can take care of ourselves. We have to now. Who calls the police anymore, okay? Who expects to get a decent get decent health care, really? Who can trust the food that we eat? I mean, nobody is taking care of us. We have to take care of ourselves. And it's hard to get that in. It's a very hard pill to swallow.
But, you know, still, we do have a civic duty. And the civic duty is to basically prohibit government from behaving like a bunch of hooligans and thugs and putting in peril the livelihoods of almost a million people.
Oh, right now, because we are participating. I mean, those people.
I'm talking about government workers.
Government is doing nothing for us. They're waging wars and stealing from us.
So what is the answer?
We just don't participate. Let them die on the vine.
Okay. I'm sure.
I'll give you an example. Okay, it's step by step. It's not just all of a sudden. All right, for one, I just do it step by step. You know that I'm a senior. I don't like that. I'm an older person. I'm an old woman. And I don't like seniors. Senior to what?
You're Clara, the old lady from Philly.
And, old woman from Philly. And they perpetrated this Medicare D on us.
Mm-hmm.
I went along with it for a while until I realized I was spending more money on the insurance because I don't have that many prescriptions. Now I have none. But that time I had some. Now I have none thanks to PRN.
But and, guess what, Clara?
But the thing is, I canceled it, and they tried to stop me, trying to make me think that it was not permissible.
But now the government, you're wanting to stop. You can't stop. Without incurring a penalty. That's the law now.
A penalty? Why
that's right.
Pay the penalty?
You cannot
if enough people didn't
to
pay it, what are they going to do?
Take what you got. Start
take
arresting people
and
throwing them in debtors' prisons.
Okay, here's a compromise. Pay the $100. Pay it. Pay the $100. That's what I'm advising my family to do.
I am thinking in that direction as well, Clara.
Thank
really,
you.
I am. Thanks so much for
okay,
calling.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Q from Manhattan. You're on. Oh, we just lost him? Please do call back. 888-874-4888. I thought we had you there. Right in line. You know, this is the thing that is bugging people. There's a fundamental sense of being so thoroughly abused by this system that has a mind and a will and power of its own to do whatever it wants to do. And then they get up and they talk about what a wonderful democratic society we have. We're so democratic that nobody has brought this bill. It has never, its entrails have not been presented to the people so that they could find out what's in all these thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of legislation that apparently is now law. What's the problem with discussing it? It hasn't come from a health committee in either house. It hasn't come through a process of discussion and debate. You know, And we have this kind of thing going on where the president doesn't need to talk to Congress, and Congress doesn't like the president, and the Republicans don't like the Democrats, and we have one or two or three independents who just don't know where the heck they are in the scheme of things, and the crushing consequences. This should really upset people. It's not just the law itself, which is a travesty, but the whole concept of the relationship that we theoretically should have, you know, between the governed and those who are governed. Hugh, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes. Just a suggestion. I think we might have it wrong about what's going on in Congress right now.
Okay.
I say we because even though I think it's wrong, I think I had the same mistake. What the Republicans especially, although I think ultimately the Democrats are in on this too, because we can see what's been going on over the years, it's not incompetence that they're demonstrating in what they're, the inability to, you know, manage the continuity of paychecks, of programs and so forth, with the, you know, the so-called crisis that's going on now. It's a deliberate attempt, I think, to debase Congress. And debasing themselves in the process, but they don't really care because that's not where I think they see their future. Their objective is to create such a buffoonish picture of politicians and of elected government, basically that, not just them personally, but of elected government, so that waiting in the wings, which I think we have every reason to believe is the case, major corporations, their subsidiaries, their subcontractors will step in and say, look, they can't do it. If you want a national government, let alone state governments and local governments, if you want a national government, you'll have to rent it back from us. We will do it for you. These buffoons can't do it. We will do it. And the reason why I think this is that they've already done this to the privatization of army contracts, of soldiers. They've done it to education. They've done it to prisons. They're just about to do it to the health service. And I think this is the final attack on what we once thought was elected government. And what they get out of it is very obvious. Instead of individual collection agencies to pay for the services and the profits that they rent to us, they will basically have the Treasury, who could hold a gun to our heads every year, just like the, you know, more or less, you know, I would add the Federal Reserve as well as an example of this. But they basically would cut out all the middlemen. They could go directly to the Treasury. We rent government back from these guys because, obviously, the people we elect and the institutions that the Constitution set up can't do it. And I think, you know, so I think that what appears to be incompetence is, especially on the Republicans' part, is basically an attempt to just totally debase the idea of elected government as we know it.
You know, that is a very fascinating analysis there. It's quite intriguing.
It cuts the middleman out. They go right to the heart.
It
the
could
Congress,
be.
I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
It would be like Saudi Arabia. Whenever it needs to fight a war, it rents the U.S. Army and Navy and Air Force.
Exactly. And they get a profit. No, they not only rent it out to them. I mean, obviously, procurement contracts and all that have been corrupt enough, but what they're looking for is the real deal. That the Treasury and its entire collection apparatus works for them. And this is not just American corporations. We're talking about the whole worldwide investors will be in on this. And you can see that happening with the Trans-Pacific Partnership as an example. But this, I think, is a public debasement of the very idea of elected government. Because if you look at the polls, at least the so-called polls, say, look, you know, people think that Congress is a waste, and they develop this very negative attitude, and again, waiting in the wings will be people saying we can manage it better. The same thing happened to the schools, right? They completely underfund, debase the management of the school systems, create a testing regimen that makes the schools look horrible. And then they turn around and say, well, this has to be, we have to offer a real choice, namely to rent our school system, what had been a public school system, from these private corporations. And they did the same thing. They do the same thing in medical care. They say, well, we closed down the hospitals. The hospitals just can't do what they're doing. We have to. This has to be managed, you know, really from the top. And they, you know, it's sort of the final stage of what's been brewing for a long time, I think.
Well, it's a very, very extraordinary analysis. It's striking me as you talk. It's making sense.
It's striking to think about it.
And you know, the trigger word here for me in what you have just offered is debasement, because that is exactly how I feel.
I know, and I use that word because of your addressing this issue. So, yes.
That's exactly the way I think most people feel. We feel debased by this awful. Is this the best that we can do? are these the best minds that we have making the law of the land? You feel utterly, you're infested with a really nasty germ, you know.
Yeah.
But what an extraordinary view. Thank you very much, Hugh, for that.
Well, happy to share it with you, and have a wonderful show now.
Thank you so much. Well, the show, of course, is the byproduct of everybody's contribution, and I'm thrilled. You don't understand how thrilled I am to have the pleasure of your company and your thoughts, because they are, as you just saw with Tom and Clara and Q and Hugh, you have extraordinary minds, you know, and this is what we ought to be doing. We ought to be doing a lot more talking and getting ideas out there that, of course, open your eyes and you see the world very differently. So even when, you know, they try to palm one off on you, you have an entirely different point of reference. And we are doing this in this exchange. So I'm really delighted and I feel very honored that you consistently offer such really profound thoughts. Well, we've come to the end of our program, really, but I see we have one caller. If we can get you to do real fast talking, Bill, from Washington.
Well, I can talk fast. I just think that what we're all discussing are the symptoms of the problem rather than the cause of the problem. I think if you look at society as a whole, I'm also an old person. Seems like today was old person day.
Well, I'm an old person.
I can remember a time, and I'm sure you can also, when children's heroes were firemen and policemen and people who were serving the community. And now today's children, their heroes are the people who are able to scan the most money the quickest without having to do any work. And I think if you look overall at society, the reality is we're getting exactly what we have earned over the last 50 or 60 years. And perhaps this whole thing just has to play out until a point where it becomes so intolerable that we decide as a people that we have to head in a separate direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Well said. Thanks so much. Well, Bill had the last say from Washington. Tomorrow, it's, of course, our open forum dates, Tuesday, so pay attention to what's going on. By now, the Senate should be meeting. And look, I don't even care. we'll find out the news tonight. Somebody tell us what they did. And then we come back to each other tomorrow. And thank you so much. All right, stay tuned. Coming up next is Wake Up Call with Richard Martin. You want to stay tuned for that. And we'll be here with each other tomorrow. God willing, in the creek don't rise. Bye-bye.